Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from back there in Maryland, Pastor David Whitney, and we're going to be talking about our Constitution, which is really the only thing that separates America from every other country in the world. You know, most of our people here come from immigrants. Almost all of them are for immigrants, except for the American Indian. And we're from the various races and religions. But the one thing that binds us together and makes us a nation is a common language and a common constitution. Now, there are people who would destroy that, who would try to create a multicultural society and divide us with people who really don't understand that we are a republic, not a democracy. They understand that we have a unique form of government that most of our elected officials either don't believe in or don't even understand. But there is a conscious, organized effort to rekindle that spark of patriotism and understanding of the foundations of our freedom, which are our founding documents. And that, of course, is being carried out by the Institute of the Constitution. And certainly, Pastor David Whitney is one of the leaders of that. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's an honor to be on your program, because I know that your listeners are people who really care about this country and want to see a restoration of our constitutional republic.
We certainly do. Well, why don't you just sort of pick up, and what are we going to be talking about today?
We're going to look at an overview of the Constitution, specifically the preamble in Article 1. But before we do, the father of the Constitution, James Madison, as he's often called, said this: every word of the Constitution decides a question between power and liberty. And so what I want to emphasize as we look at the details of the Constitution, that every phrase and every word needs to be understood, and needs to be understood as our founding fathers intended it. As you and I know, the reason why we are so far from the constitutional republic that our founders bequeathed to us is that those who would destroy it have twisted the words, or at many times completely ignored the words of the Constitution, and they've gotten away with it because most Americans don't know the Constitution and don't know what they need to hold their elected officials accountable to. Well, you know, the preamble to the Constitution is very short, and it's very short because, in a sense, the Declaration of Independence is the more lengthy preamble, because it sets forth the basic ideals of the nation, and it sets forth the basis of our foundation in law, and that is the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, the Bible. Well, it begins with the phrase, "We the people," and this demonstrates that governmental power is derived from consent of the governed, that we the people really are the king. If you were to have a structure and wonder, well, who's king in this land, it's the people. We the people, by our consent, have agreed to this contract, this covenant called our Constitution. It also shows the framers' view of this contractual nature of government authority. The government can't impose its authority on us willy-nilly. It's we, the people, who enter into a covenant agreement with them. There's stipulations that require them to abide by the covenant that we have entered into, and also spell out penalties if they do not abide by that covenant called our United States Constitution.
All right, well, I'm going to interrupt you there, David, because we're going to have to let some of our listeners go and then bring new listeners on. So we're going to have to take a short break here, and then when we get back, why we'll further this idea of this unique document that has given more people more freedom than has ever been known in the recorded history. A document which tragically very few people understand today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute on the Constitution. And today we're going to be talking about the preamble to the Constitution, which, of course, in many ways was really the Declaration of Independence. But in the Constitution itself, it begins with those words, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union." And there are about seven adverbs there, as I remember, or verbs, or verbs that tell really what this was really all about, to form a more perfect union and establish justice. And I'm going to let David talk about this, but understanding that every word in the Constitution was important. And they debated the use of the words very, very specifically because they did not want to give the wrong impression. But the one impression that they all agreed upon was laid out in the opening phrases, the second paragraph of the Declaration, that governments are instituted among men to preserve these rights. And the rights that they were speaking about was our God-given rights. For we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and that to preserve these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their power from the consent of the governed. That was what it was all about. So we form this government. Anybody who tells you, oh, you've got to obey the government because it tells you in Romans 13, and after all, you know, no matter how wicked the people are, there were wicked people back in the times of Rome, and so you have to obey the wicked people now. No, this an entirely different form of government, and we've lost it because the leaders of our churches haven't understood the foundations of our freedom, that our freedom came from God and that governments were instituted among men to preserve those freedoms. You pick the story up from there, David.
That's right. Well, the preamble goes on, as you say, to state the purposes. It actually grants no specific powers to the federal government, but you already mentioned the first purpose, to form a more perfect union. Everyone recognized that the Articles of Confederation were inadequate, and a lot of disunity resulted from them. And to end that disunity was part of the motivating factor of bringing together the Constitutional Convention. To form a more perfect union was the first. The second was to establish justice, to provide an orderly and fair court system. And, of course, this recognizes and presupposes that there is such thing as justice, an absolute fixed standard, which if you were to line up the 55 signers of the Constitution and ask them, what is the source, what is the root, what is the bottom line, where do you find what is right and wrong, where do you go to establish justice, they all would have said, to the law of our Creator God, found in His revealed word, the Bible, the laws of nature and of nature's God.
Hold that thought for just a moment, and our other stations will be back. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And David is pointing out that the basis of our law is basically from our Creator God, that everybody understood that law was based not upon what men said, but on a higher authority, and everyone in government had to obey that higher authority that was nature's God and nature's law. Everybody understood that 225 years ago, and nobody understands it today, because there's been a conscious, organized effort to dumb down our lawyers, and to dumb down our legislatures, and to dumb down our people, and to conceal the wonderful things about our Constitution. They've rewritten our textbooks. They've rewritten our encyclopedias. And this was all done under the auspices of the great tax-exempt foundations. And the reason that this is not taught in schools today is that the wicked people have taken over the teachers' colleges and of course, taken over the reins of government. So pick that story up from there as we go through the opening phrases in the preamble to the Constitution. Go ahead, David.
The third purpose they state in the preamble is to ensure domestic tranquility. There had been insurrections such as Shays' Rebellion that demonstrated that, again, the Articles of Confederation were inadequate. The fourth purpose was to provide for the common defense. The framers believed that they had and demonstrated that they had difficulties providing for the common defense under the Articles of Confederation, particularly that voluntary requisitions were all that the federal government could do to raise funds to support the army in the midst of the war for independence, which meant such tragedies as Valley Forge took place largely because of lack of funds. So the fifth purpose was to promote the general welfare. And by the way, people need to underline that phrase in their minds. General welfare means not the specific welfare of specific individuals or specific groups or specific regions or specific socioeconomic categories. It was for general welfare, which means every single person must directly benefit by any spending, and we'll go on to see that in Article 1, that Congress has no authority to spend any money at all except for the general welfare. Very important purpose. And then the sixth purpose was to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. First, this shows that the framers' fundamental concern in the Constitution was to secure liberty, because they knew that liberty, as they said in the Declaration, liberty was a God-given right, and the governments were instituted to secure those God-given rights, the right to liberty. The second aspect of this phrase shows that they intended the Constitution to be a permanent document. In other words, if you said we're going to secure the blessings of liberty, but only for this generation, the two or three or four generations, or 100 years or 200 years later, we don't expect to secure the blessings of liberty, they would not have included the phrase for our posterity. In other words, they expected that this Constitution would remain unchanged in terms of its fundamental purposes and fundamental protection of human rights all the way through hundreds and hundreds of years.
And I think it's so important that the point that you're making, certainly they allowed for the amendment of the Constitution, mm-hmm. but it was to be very difficult. And there are people like, of course, Bill Clinton and Al Gore, who don't like the Constitution. So they wanted, to change this by judicial edict or simply by executive order. But they didn't want to go to the people. They wanted to do it by totalitarian means. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly say, well, this is the law of the land. And it's not the law of the land. The law of the land is the Constitution, and when the Supreme Court justices come up with decisions that are in violation of the basic principles, then it is, of course, is the Supreme Court or the judiciary that are the lawless ones, and they should be impeached. Mm-hmm. But tragically, nobody has the courage to come out and say that. And if they want to change our way of life and our form of government, then they ought to have the courage to go to the people and say, look, we want a secular national government. We want, of course, no a mention of God in our schools, because we had this for almost 150 years, and it was simply a decision of a Masonic court that got us into the mess we are today, but nobody ever wants to say that. So what we need to do is understand that they knew exactly what they're doing for us and for our posterity, a permanent document that cannot be changed. Mm-hmm. This is not a living, breathing constitution, and it's about time the American people understood that these people like Al Gore and Bill Clinton, who talk about this being a changeable document, are simply traitors to America.
That's right. And Thomas Jefferson, later in his life, said that if we want to understand the Constitution, we need to go back to the intent of the framers when they formed this Constitution. In other words, he said, original intent is the guiding interpretation of the Constitution. And that's where those who like Gore spout this ilk about a living constitution. They want to ignore the plain meaning of the word. They want to ignore the original intent of the founders, because they know that's the only way they can get away with butchering the words and the meaning of the Constitution. Well, they intended this to be a permanent document, and it shows that they had a concern and a willingness to sacrifice for the well-being of future generations. And that brings up a very important point. This speaks of our posterity, and this speaks of not only those who are infants, but it speaks of those who are unborn, and it speaks of generations yet to even be conceived, which says that our Constitution was designed to protect the unborn and future generations, which means that Roe versus Wade is in direct violation of the purposes for which this Constitution was founded, by the plain meaning and the plain understanding of the text. Therefore, abortion, Roe v. Wade, is a decision that is unconstitutional on its face, and it should be done away with by a courageous president, and any court or judges that uphold it, they should be impeached by courageous congressmen and senators.
And so, of course, they can simply do that by limiting their appellate court jurisdiction.
Right.
But nobody ever says that. Oh, we've got to have a constitutional amendment. Mm-hmm. We've got to do this or that. It's a very, very simple solution.
That's right.
But nobody wants to tell the American people that. You know, another thing, David, I think it's so important, the way they talk about how we want to provide for the common defense, but we want to promote the general welfare. We don't want to provide for the general welfare. We want to promote the general welfare. Because any government that can provide for the general welfare has got to be able to provide for the people from the cradle to the grave and have got to be able to control them. They never wanted to provide for the people. They wanted to promote the general welfare. And the way that they phrased this was really so ingenious.
They were not socialists by any means at all, and those who would try to claim that that phrase, promoting the general welfare, allows for socialism, are nothing but a pack of liars. Well, they continue that they do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America, again demonstrating that this is a covenantal or a contractual agreement that we the people have entered into with our national government. And basically we need to understand that the citizens play an extremely vital, important role in going to the ballot box, in casting their ballots, casting their vote. They are to vote into office only those who will truly uphold the Constitution, which means the voters each need to understand the meaning of the Constitution as intended by the original founding fathers, because they are the ones who ultimately hold in check the power of those who go to Washington. Well, this preamble simply states purposes, and it's brief because the Declaration is really the more lengthy preamble. So let's move into Article 1. In Article 1, if you want a simple way to remember where to find things in the Constitution, Article 1 deals with the legislative branch. Article 2 deals with the executive branch, and Article 3 deals with the judiciary. So if you remember that, legislative, executive, judiciary, there you got Article 1, Article 2, and Article 3. Well, Article 1 establishes a bicameral, that is, two houses of Congress. The House of Representatives was popularly elected by each district in each state, and it represents the people directly. The Senate, however, was structured in a very different fashion, and this has been lost, as we'll discuss in a minute what took place. It was chosen by the state legislature. For example, if we were talking about here in Maryland, I vote and elect a delegate who goes to the state legislature and serves in the House of Delegates or serves in the Senate. Those two bodies are the ones that then would choose the state senators for the state of Maryland. In other words, the people of Maryland would never directly vote for their senators, as our Constitution was originally designed, and they had a purpose in this. The purpose was that the Senate was to represent the people through the means of the state. In other words, the Senate was under the control, in a sense, of the legislature of each state. So the legislature of the state would have a check on federal power. One of the things that's a great problem today is federal mandates that are unfunded. That is, the federal legislature tells the states, you've got to do X, Y, and Z, and we're not going to give you any money, but if you don't do it, we are going to fine you and penalize you and so on and so forth. Well, if the Senate was under the control of the state legislatures, they could easily eliminate any such unfunded federal mandates. They could tell their senators, this is how you are to vote, and if you don't vote this way, we will remove you from your office and replace you with someone who will do our bidding.
Well, you know, David, I think the most important thing is that people understand that everything was checks and balances. Certainly there was checks and balances between the executive and the legislative, and certainly the legislature could, pass a law. The president could veto that law. The legislature could override the veto of that law. The legislature could impeach the president of the United States. The judicial had a part in this, but it was more than just legislative, judicial, and executive. There was the balance between the federal government and the states.
That's right.
So the federal government was never to become all powerful. Our founding fathers feared power, knowing it would be misused, and that's why indirect election of senators, so they would represent the states, and the states would be where the power was ready to be kept, and the central government was only to defend us, ready to set up weights and measures and a few things like that, but it was not ever to control the individual. It was not to have anything to do with trade within the states. The power of the central government was limited, and matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be maintained at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
how far we've gone away from that. And it's about time the American people understood that when they passed the 17th Amendment for the direct elections of senators, it was one of the great nails in the coffin of our Republican form of government. And the wicked people who put that through knew exactly what they were doing. They just didn't want the American people to know what they were doing. We'll be right back. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. 9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Thank you. Well, Dr. Stanback here. Our guest this afternoon is David Whitney, and we're simply going through the wording of the preamble to the Constitution. And we were talking about the fact that there were those people who've always wanted a dictatorship in America, and they realized they had to whittle away at the basis of our Constitution very slowly, and they couldn't do it too rapidly. And, we want, of course, to give the people something to say about who the senators are, and that's why we have to have the 17th Amendment passed. After all, this is going to be more representative government. Well, I want to ask our listeners, how many people think that the senators listen more to the people who give them millions of dollars for their campaigns, or you who out there might send them $10 or $20? We have some of the finest senators in Washington, D.C. that money could buy, but it is a direct result of the 17th Amendment, which eroded that concept that the senators would represent the states and not the people who could buy them at the national level. Pick up the story from there, David.
Well, it's important to remember why they formed two houses, a House and a Senate. They were part of the great compromise suggested by Roger Sherman. But the reason was that it requiring two houses to pass a bill to make it law would cool any hothead legislation, as well it would provide additional time for reflection, since the senators were chosen differently up until the 17th Amendment, as you mentioned, as well as the senators were to serve six-year terms, so that they served much longer if they were continued by their legislators from the state level. So there was a way in which there was another check and balance in the legislative process by having two houses. Now, the question is, could a bicameral legislature still thwart the will of the majority of people in our country? And the answer is yes. And the framers actually thought sometimes it should thwart the majority will, because they also trusted popular majorities. They were not creating a democracy. They were creating a constitutional republic. And the republic is different in that it is indirect governance through representatives, where democracy is much more direct, and a republic has the law as supreme, not 51% of the voting people as the supreme law of the land.
Or even 51% of the voting legislators.
That's right, yeah. So in a republic, the minority still has rights that even the majority cannot violate. In a democracy, there's no such security for a minority group. Well, the composition of the House and Senate established each of their own procedures and discipline, and congressmen in Section 6 were assured that they were free to discuss all matters, protecting them from being sued for what they might say on the floor of Congress. And then the seventh section of Article 1 speaks of the legislative process. Revenue bills are always to originate in the House, that is, with the people, directly accountable to the people, and the Senate must concur. And legislation always starts in Congress. The president can only suggest. Of course, the check and balance there is that the president may veto a bill. No line item veto was ever intended or spoken of. But Congress, of course, again, may override his veto with two-thirds of vote in each of the houses.
But, you know, increasingly we're finding the president sending down directives
yes.
to Congress on
mm-hmm.
the legislation he wants, mm-hmm. like it as if he were a king. And
that's
I'm not
right.
picking on George Bush. All presidents
yes.
are doing that, and they're telling Congress what to do. And if you don't go along with it, why, we're going to withhold funds for your reelection. We're not
mm-hmm.
going to give you any money for your constituents there. And, of course, you're not going to have any pork in your area, and your area is going to be impoverished, and your factory workers are going to lose their jobs, and they're not going to vote for you, so you better do what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And how far we've gotten yeah. away from a representative government to a totalitarian government.
That's right. And Section 8 is a very important section that Congress violates on a daily basis. The very important first phrases of the Section 8, Article 1, is that Congress may only tax and spend for three things: payment of debts, common defense, and general welfare, the clause we've spoken about before. And general welfare implies that government may not tax and spend for specific welfare of individuals or regions or socioeconomic groups or any such thing, even regulate it under the guise of taxation, because they knew that the power to confer or withhold unlimited benefits is the power to coerce and the power to destroy. You know, Dr. Stan, if it was otherwise, if they could tax and spend for the specific welfare, I would immediately call my legislators and say, I want you to put together a bill for $10 million for the specific welfare of my favorite charity, David Whitney. give me $10 million and I'll spend it on houses and boats and planes, and I will stimulate the economy by spending this $10 million that you give to me. Well, our founding fathers knew that that was a ridiculous idea, and yet that is what Congress does 90-some percent of the time, and most of what they're spending is on specific welfare in direct violation of Article 1, Section 8.
Not only that, but we have corporate welfare, and some of our most powerful and wealthy corporations, they get welfare as well. So why should we just have it for the poor? The trouble is the poor don't get that much, but the corporations do. Mm-hmm. We've got to cut back on the power of government for everyone, else we shall lose our freedom. We'll be right back here with Pastor David Whitney.
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a few weeks ago, Kevin DeMeritt of Lear Financial contacted us and asked if he could sponsor some of our programs. Well, I looked into the background of the company. They have an excellent reputation, so I think it's a good time to think very seriously about investing in precious metals. Why? Because we have inflation, we have a progressively devalued dollar, that we've lost almost 30-40% of our value of our currency, and we know that people like Warren Buffett are investing overseas. They're not investing in American currencies. Why not give the people at Lear Financial a call at 1-888-302-7111, that's 1-888-302-7111, and ask for their free audio seminar. Again, the number 1-888-302-7111. I think this is an excellent time to consider protecting your assets.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. I guess this afternoon, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And David, before we go on, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with your group? I set up a local institute and classes to teach the Constitution in their region, because I think that's so vitally important. Would you like to get your telephone number and your website out?
Our telephone number is a toll-free number, 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or they can actually order a host kit over our website, which is iotconline.com. One word, iotconline.com. As we looked and we were discussing the general welfare clause and how that has been violated, one of the significant Supreme Court decisions that punched a hole in that was Stewart Machine Company v. Davis in 1927, and they held that Congress may tax some groups and subsidize other groups because the subsidized groups will spend more and thus stimulate the general welfare. Again, completely in the opposite position of what our founding fathers held, and those Supreme Court justices that decided that should have been impeached at that point in time for having violated their oath to uphold the Constitution and to rule under the Constitution, not to rule against the Constitution, which is what they did. Well, going on with the powers granted to Congress, they were granted power to borrow money, to regulate commerce, and note it's only three ways they were to regulate commerce: with foreign nations, with Indian tribes, which were being treated as foreign nations, and among the several states, that is, interstate commerce from one state to another. They were never granted the power to do regulate intrastate commerce, that is, within one state. If I was running a business here in Maryland and selling to another person in Maryland, the federal government has no constitutional authority to regulate intrastate production or intrastate commerce. And yet, there's a series of Supreme Court decisions, again, mostly in the past century, 1918, 1942, in which Congress demonstrated that they had these decisions of the Supreme Court said that Congress may regulate domestic production of things like grain for the consumption of livestock on the same farm it was produced, because such production, they said, could potentially affect intrastate commerce, that is, between, or interstate commerce between states. And effectively, the Supreme Court has obliterated this check on the power of the Congress that they may not regulate commerce within a state. Then Congress, again, was given the power to make rules for naturalization, rules for bankruptcy, to coin money, which, by the way, constitutional money is gold and silver. The fiat paper currency we have is unconstitutional. They also were given power to punish counterfeiting, to establish post offices, post office roads, to establish copyrights and patents and the rules for such, to establish the federal courts below the Supreme Court. In other words, all the federal circuit courts are under the direct control of Congress. Congress can eliminate them. Congress can create additional ones. Congress has full power over all of the lower courts, as well as it has the power to restrict the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, which we'll look at in a few programs ahead when we look at Article 3. Furthermore, Congress could define and punish piracy and felonies on the high seas. They could declare war, and only they could declare war. The president was never granted the power to declare war, and unfortunately in our country, the last constitutionally declared war was World War II. So you take the Korean War, Vietnam conflict, and on the list goes, right up to modern-day Iraq. All of those are unconstitutional wars because only Congress has the power to declare war. They have the power to raise and support armies, armies being a general term for all military forces. But the idea was, because they were given a two-year limitation on funding when they declared war, they could fund the war for 2 years. They had to come back and make a decision after that point in time to continue it. They were, however, to provide and maintain a navy, because a navy is a much more permanent force. You just can't build ships in a minute than the army. The army was not intended to be a standing army, because our founding fathers knew that if you have a standing army, the temptation will be to find some war or to create some war to go to use the army. Then they were to also govern the military with rules of discipline called the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and they were to provide for calling the militia of the individual states into federal service to suppress insurrections and execute federal laws, as well as to repel invasions. They were to organize, arm, and discipline the militia while the militia's in federal service. In terms of properties over which the federal government was to have control, Congress was the one that controlled that, the District of Columbia, and other federal properties, but those federal properties were limited to forts and magazines and ports that were necessary for the Navy, not to the unconstitutional national parks and all the rest of the land that our government owns. All of those, again, are unconstitutional violations of the limits placed upon our federal Congress. Now, what is often called the elastic clause is at the end of Section 8, it says that they do what may be necessary and proper to carry out the foregoing powers granted to Congress. And yet, our founding fathers never intended this to be an elastic clause as it has been interpreted today. And the problem is that, again, another Supreme Court decision, McCulloch v. Maryland, said that necessary means reasonably suited, not absolutely indispensable. Again, a distortion of what was intended by our founding fathers. That decision also said that proper means what is not forbidden by other provisions of the Constitution. So again, that began to stretch this phrase to make it what has become today. The necessary and proper clause has become a very elastic clause, giving far too much power to the Congress that was never intended.
And I think, David, it's so important that our listeners understood that our founding were in government. They wanted to limit the power of the central authority, and matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be cared for at the local, pardon me, at the state and the local level, never at the national level, because they knew that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And they feared people. They knew they were corrupt. They knew they could be bribed. They knew that they would be willing to sell their votes now for a plus job as a lobbyist or something else when they got out of the Congress or the Senate. And that's exactly what happens today. That's why you can't trust them with the power. And if you value freedom, you've got to return to our Constitution and limit the power of government. And you have a congressman that goes up there and votes for pork and sells his votes. Doesn't matter whether you agree with him on every other issue, you've got to get him out because he's violating his oath. And if he'll violate his oath to the Constitution, he will betray America.
That's right. Well, Section 9 of Article 1 limits congressional authority. That Congress cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus. That is a phrase indicating that if a governmental authority arrests you, they must charge you and must put you on trial, that they just cannot arrest you and throw you in prison without cause, without stating the reason why you have been arrested.
And yet they're doing that right now.
Yes.
They're doing that with these people. They're American citizens. They may not be very nice people, but you take away their rights, doesn't matter whether they're nice people or not, that nobody's rights are really protected. And our Christian president is pushing these things. It just doesn't make sense. Our Christian president and our Christian attorney general seem to have no respect at all for the Constitution,
right,
saying, oh, we need this to fight terrorism. Well, what's wrong with allowing these people to have their day in court if they're guilty?
We could prove it in a court of law. That they could not pass a bill of attainder, that is, legislative finding of guilt. That's the court's business. The legislature was not to act as a court, except in the case of impeachment. Furthermore, they could not pass ex post facto law, that is, punishing a person for an act that was legal when they committed the act, but then later in time they passed the law and said, well, this we'll go back to the time that the person committed this act when it was legal, and we'll make it illegal and therefore punish them. They could not raise the status of an offense from misdemeanor to felony in the same manner, or increase the penalty, making it ex post facto. And direct taxes, and here's another very important part of Article 1, Section 9, direct taxes must be in proportion to the census. That is, they were not to directly tax the citizens. Taxes were not to be upon the heads of each citizen. They were to be given to the state, and the state was actually to raise the tax themselves. So a large state, of course, would be charged with raising a larger portion of the federal budget than a small state, but it was never to be a direct tax such as our income tax of today. And there was to be no titles of nobility. And again, they understood that what took place in Europe with the kind of favors granted and structure of society based upon nobility was something they'd completely wanted to avoid. And then finally, Section 10 of Article 1 states that there are limitations upon state authority. Each of the individual states could not enter into treaties and alliances or confederations. They could not paper money or coin money of any sort. That was left to the federal government.
Oh, now, couldn't the states coin money as long as it was gold and silver?
Yes, but it had to be, in other words, it was regulated by the federal government and what they could and could not do, so
right,
that they just didn't have the freedom to do whatever they might choose in that regard. Likewise, the states could not pass a bill of or attainder, that is, the state legislatures could not function as a courtroom, nor could they pass ex post facto law. and they could not pass any law that would impair obligations of contracts. Our framers believed that the right to make and enforce a contract was a God-given right, and there was no way in which federal or state could enter into, causing the impairment of obligations that had been entered into freely by individuals. That the consent of Congress tax imports or exports except as necessary for inspections, and the state would not or could not, without the consent of Congress, levy duty on ships or keep their own troops in peacetime or mere states or make war except when invaded or in imminent danger. So the Constitution prohibits the state governments from doing specific things, but more importantly, it prevented the federal legislature, the Congress, the Senate, and the House from doing a number of things that, as we've already discussed just briefly, the Congress does daily, and they do so without impunity, and people ought to be outraged that their tax dollars are and their tax bill is as high as it is because the federal government is violating our covenant with them. Our Constitution is being violated by them on a daily basis. Most spending, most pork spending, and 90-some percent of the bills passed involve something that is actually in violation of the Constitution. And there's one of two things that are going on here, Dr. Stan. Perhaps none of congressmen really understand the Constitution. Most of them are lawyers, and as I've spoken with a number of lawyers and asked them specifically, did they study what the Founding Fathers intended when they went to law school? They said, no. We never studied the Constitution itself and what it meant to our Founding Fathers. Instead, we studied all case laws that have proceeded since then. In other words, the evasions and the violations and the way to get around the Constitution is what all lawyers these days study. And the result is that most people who study law don't understand the Constitution, and they really need to take Institute on the Constitution. Take all 12 weeks, and they'll far better understanding of the Constitution than they had beforehand. And the result is that not only do most lawyers not understand the Constitution, most citizens as well do not understand it.
And most of our judges don't understand it. And they pretty need to take courses on our Constitution. Even many of the state legislatures don't understand their state constitutions.
Right.
They think they can do whatever they want to because they have the power and they're violating the laws, but nobody calls them on it. Every single one of our states. Not one of them is a democracy. Every one of them is a republic, a government of laws that's stipulated in our federal constitution that every state will have a republic form of government. Isn't it interesting? You can read the Declaration of the Constitution and the constitutions of all of our states and the Bill of Rights and the Federalist Papers. You'll never see mention of the word democracy other than to say that we don't want a democracy because that's going to lead to tyranny. Isn't it interesting that George Bush and Bill Clinton and Al Gore all say we're a democracy, and John Kerry says a democracy? Why? Because democracies always end up resulting in tyranny. Is that what this is really all about?
I think there's a plan, Dr. Stan, and the plan is to slowly erode our constitutional freedoms, slowly enough that most people won't wake up until it's too late, just like the frog put in a warm pan of water if you turn the heat off. So the frog makes adjustments in its own body, and it doesn't know that it's being boiled to death. And that's what's happening to our constitutional republic, bit by bit, year by year, chipping away both from the judiciary down and the legislature in the bills that they're passing, and the president with things like executive orders, which are, again, a king acting, you know, without any check on his power. So all these things are designed ultimately to erode it far enough to a point where they have enough control over all the various aspects of our national, then they can establish their tyranny, which I believe is the goal of the one worlders. You know, if you listen closely to what the candidates speak about, you'll discover that both major party candidates, Kerry and Bush, are promising before they've taken, well, Bush is in office, but before they take their oath, they're promising to violate the Constitution. Most of the programs that they're proposing are completely unconstitutional, not at all within the jurisdiction of the federal government. They're at the state government level, if at all, legitimate functions of government according to our founding fathers. So you got people promising to break their oath of office when they swear to uphold and defend the Constitution.
And, of course, the things that they're planning to continue shipping our jobs overseas, to continue shipping our industries overseas, and this is going to lead to the destruction of the dollar. Everything the listeners out there held in dollar-denominated increments, whether they be annuities or pension funds or bonds or CDs, they're all going to be destroyed. But, of course, don't you worry. They've got a plan. They'll simply come up with total government control over everything. What happened in Hitler's Germany? Why did they welcome Adolf Hitler? That massive inflation that lost all of their savings, and they were looking for somebody who was going to solve their problems, and he did. Why? He got the economy working again. He made them proud to be Germans, you know, and, of course, you know the rest of the story. Could that happen here? Well, if we don't get back to our Constitution and understand that our freedoms come from God, and maybe even get our children to realize there is a God, rather than train them in schools dedicated to the destruction of their freedom, we're going to lose America. David, let's get your website out there. Let's get your telephone number again so people can get in touch with you.
Our website is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com, where they can call us toll-free, 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796.
Thank you for everything you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan, for the great work you're doing in spreading the truth across America.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, Ode to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that for the people here in the state of California, why there's legislation that's going to be acted on, they're fearfully within the next few days. It's called SB 96, that's Senate Bill 96, and it's going to force every community in this state to be fluoridated. In other words, here in Santa Cruz and over in Watsonville, the people have voted against it. But you see, the fascists in Sacramento are getting large sums of money from the people who want to get rid of it, and also, of course, from our government, which realizes that fluoridation decreases fertility. Fluoridation dumbs down the mind. It actually works on the mind. We actually have studies that show you lose 10 to 15 points in your IQ if your water is fluoridated at a young age. Of course, it affects the bones. It's toxic to the liver. It produces cancer. And you say, they wouldn't do that to the American people. And I would say, why wouldn't they? They're sending your boys over to die in Iraq. They're killing the people over in Iraq because we had to go there to protect ourselves from those weapons of mass destruction. They really are evil people. What we want you to do is call your assemblymen and call your senators right now and say, don't vote for SB 96. You oppose this bill that will force them to be able to poison the people of the state of California. They're doing it all across the country. That they don't do this in Europe. Why? Because they've looked at the scientific studies. We've got wicked people here from it. PA scientists have come out and said, don't you realize we're poisoning the people? They control the media. They're able to control what the people think. You get on your, right away, you call your senator and you call your assemblyman, vote no on SB 96. You don't want them to be forcibly fluoridate the water. We'll do great selling big Berkeys, but I don't want them to see poisoning our children, and that's exactly what they're intending to do. No on 96. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and once again, for our listeners across the state of California, let me remind you that legislation is before the state, and it's going to be, it's called SB 96, and it's being pushed by Congressman, pardon me, our local assemblyman, John Laird, who, of course, isn't really concerned about posterity. So John Laird is pushing this legislation to force the people to fluoridate their water, even though the people in Santa Cruz and Watsonville and all across the state, communities have said, we don't want our water fluoridated. The majority are against it. They're not interested in majority rule. They're interested in poisoning the water. And, of course, all of these people are getting big donations from the people within the medical organizations that are pushing it, within the public health organizations, from the fertilizer industry, the aluminum industry, because it would cost them a great deal to do away with this toxic element. It's so toxic they actually have to put it in special tanks. They can't put it in metal tanks because it leaked right through the metal tanks. Fluoride is one of the most active of all of the elements, and it's extremely toxic. It's used in rat poison. It's the active ingredient in Prozac. You need to get our 4-tape set on fluoride. You need to get our material on fluoride, but let me suggest our 4-tape set on fluoride. And you need, of course, to get on the telephone and call your assemblyman and your state senator and say, no, we've already voted against this. Don't we have any rights? And they're going to tell you, we know what's best for you because we're the elite. We, of course, are your elected representatives. And I say vote them all out of office. That's SB 96. And, of course, get the information. It's time we took a stand against the people who are poisoning our children. After all, isn't it all for the children? Isn't that how they justify this? We'll show you the scientific studies if you want them. Put out by the American Dental Association that says it doesn't do any good to ingest fluoride. It only acts locally. Why does it act locally? Because it's so toxic it kills the bacteria in your mouth, and so the bacteria would have put in the cavities. What a great sell the American people anything, as long as we don't know. And that's why we do what we do. Why, if you look at the toothpaste tubes, there's a warning. If your child is to eat the toothpaste, get them to a poison center right away. Why? Because it'll kill them if you don't. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's some poisonous with mercury. You need to get our 4-tape set on mercury. You need to get our 4-tape set on why is there still cancer. You need to get our 4-tape set on genocide and our 4-tape set on the new order of the barbarians. You need to get the material Radio Liberty offers that will explain to you there really are evil and wicked people out there who have no compassion for humanity, who are quite willing to kill blacks. You need to get our 4-tape set on the Tuskegee study. There's nothing like it because we interviewed the man who wrote the classic article, the classic book on Tuskegee, and the man who blew the whistle on Tuskegee as well. Fascinating insights to realize the degree of evil that really exists in our society. Call 1-800-544-8927. Get the 4-tape set on fluoridation. Get the 4-tape set on mercury. Get the 4-tape set on vaccines that are being used to poison our children and increase the diabetes and the allergy and the asthma and all of these things. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know because, after all, it's always for the children. Why do we still have cancer? The 4-tape set on Laetrile, the 4-tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. You'll see all of them listed there. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We're going to have copies of a book on Lab 256 or 257 about the West Nile virus, the experiments that were done on Plum Island, right across from a place called Lyme, Connecticut, where the first cases of Lyme disease came from. Understand, there really are people who've sold their souls to the devil. You need our videos, either the 4 or the 10-hour version of they sold their souls for rock and roll, because, of course, the musicians will do it. Some of the politicians will do it as well. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to pray for America. You need to pray for revival. You need to pray for our ministers. And remember our meeting we're going to have on the 6th of November here in Santa Cruz at Seascape. Call 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection until tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.